aqueous and vitreous humours with the same mindless efficiency as it tackled the coffee stains. No one stopped me leaving. I slipped into a washroom to slap more cold water on my face and clean the blood from my fist. Inside, I forced slow and deliberate calm. The room was empty, furnished with a long row of lavatories, the doors of which were marked with complicated diagrams to show how they were meant to be used. I poked and prodded my chest until I'd satisfied myself that nothing was more than bruised, then completed the rest of my walk to the departure area. The behemoth, the manta-shaped spacecraft, was attached like a lamprey to the rotating skin of the habitat. Up close, the thing looked a lot less smooth and aerodynamic than it had from a distance. The hull was pitted and scarred, with streaks of sooty black discoloration. Two streams of humanity were being fed aboard the ship from opposing sides. My stream was a shuffling, dun-colored slurry of despondency, people trudging down the spiraling access tunnel as if to the gallows. The other stream looked only slightly more enthusiastic, but through the transparent connecting tube I saw people attended by servitors, bizarrely enhanced pets, even people shaped towards animal forms themselves. The palanquins of hermetics glided amongst them, dark upright boxes like metronomes. There was a commotion behind me, someone pushing past.
"Tenna," he said in a hoarse stage whisper, "you made it too. When you disappeared, I was worried that more of Vadim's thugs had found you."
"He's pushing in," I heard someone mutter behind me. "Did you see that? I've a good mind to..." I turned back, locking eyes with the person I instinctively knew had been speaking. "He's with me. If you've got a problem with it, you deal with me. Otherwise, shut up and stand in line." Quirrenbach slipped into the line next to me.
"Thanks."
"All right. Just keep your voice down and don't mention Vadim again."
"So you think he really might have friends all over the place?"
"I don't know, but I could do without any kind of trouble for a while."
"I can imagine, especially after..."
He blanched. "I don't even want to think about what happened back there." "Then don't. With any luck, you'll never have to." The line pushed forward, completing the final spiral into the top of the behemoth. Inside, it was vast and tastefully lit, like the lobby of a particularly grand hotel. The walkway made several more loops before it reached the floor. People were wandering around with drinks in their hands, their luggage scooting ahead of them or being handled by monkeys. Sloping windows arced away in either direction, roughly defining the edge of one of the manta's wings. The interior of the behemoth must have been almost completely hollow, but I couldn't see more than a tenth of it from where I was standing. Scattered here and there were clusters of seats, sometimes grouped for conversation, sometimes surrounding a dribbling fountain or a clump of exotic foliage. Now and then the rectilinear shape of a palanquin slid across the floor like a chess piece. I moved towards an unoccupied pair of seats overlooking one of the window panels. I was tired enough to want to doze quietly, but I didn't dare close my eyes. What if there hadn't been an earlier behemoth departure, and Rivage was somewhere inside the spacecraft even now?
"Preoccupied, Tenner?" said Quirrenbach, sliding into the seat next to mine. "You have that look about you."
"Are you sure this is the best place to get a good view?"
"Excellent point, Tenner, excellent point. But if I'm not sitting next to you, how am I going to hear about Sky?"
He began to fiddle with his briefcase. "Now there's plenty of time for you to tell me all the rest." "You nearly get killed, and all you can think about is that madman."
"You don't understand. I'm thinking now, what about a symphony for Sky?"